lend a little bit of credibility to this conversation with John Wertheim.
No, I'm overstaying my welcome.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I'm sure John's going to appreciate some intelligent tennis questions for a change, other than the regular basic stuff that he usually gets from me. But John Wertheim, 60 Minutes, CBS, Tennis Channel, Sports Illustrated. You can find him at SI.com. He's answering questions there. Had the most amazing story away from tennis. 60 Minutes. I know a couple of weeks ago, John, we talked about a different feature that you had done, but this piece about who it was that sold out the Frank family in Amsterdam was unbelievable. Welcome back, John, Darren, and Landon Donovan in studio. How are we doing today?
How are you? Good to be here. I don't know how we're going to pivot from Anne Frank to the Australian Open, but we will try. How are you guys doing?
We are great. I must ask, because I think that the story somewhat spoke for itself. How surreal is it to be doing a story like that about something that happened 75 years ago?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I think the real surreal part of it is just these FBI guys who have used these AI and, you know, when we think about uses for artificial intelligence, we don't think about solving these historical riddles. And my question to them that we didn't really get into the 60 Minutes piece is, like, what's next? If you can find out who sold out Anne Frank and her family, imagine what other historical riddles are out there that you can kind of bring these new techniques to.
Like, yeah. Who was the second gunman on the grassy knoll?
Exactly.
Yeah, what's next, John? You tell us. I mean, this must open up all new possibilities for you and the crew at 60 Minutes.
Your esteemed guest just said the one that that I threw out, these guys. So,
tell you what, great minds think alike.
Yeah, exactly. Bonnie and Clyde, I mean, you sort of think about...
Tupac?
Exactly. Anyway, the mind wanders.
Well, it was amazing. It was amazing work. I don't know, you know, the awards that they give out for those sorts of pieces. That one, to me, was just, it was incredible. It was riveting, John, and obviously a credit to you and the production staff there at 60 Minutes. I can't encourage people enough to go to watch that. I know we're here to talk about tennis, so we will pivot to the Australian Open, things that have happened thus far. John Wertheim joining us on Extra 1360. John, you know the tennis community really well. Last we spoke, you know, this was being set up, what was going on with Novak Djokovic. I just wonder what reaction you've heard as an insider inside of the tennis community from the way this whole situation played out there.
Well, I think everybody sort of struggled with how much do you want to, you know, beat up the number one player in this event that everybody loves. But no one covered themselves in glory. I think that a lot of these players didn't want to be vaccinated and sort of did it grudgingly. So I think one thing I kept hearing was, you know, look, if I had known this was an option, I would have tried to get this loophole as well. So I think that's where some of the resentment came. And I think the big question, honestly, is just kind of spinning it forward. But everyone talked about Djokovic and vaccines, but what I think that the short shrift is, this guy is absolutely on the threshold of history. This is, you know, the Maguire, you know, like Maguire Bond Sosa home run wreck. And the fact that all this is happening amid this great kind of bit of history. I mean, Rafa Nadal could be the all-time majors winner, which is, you know, sort of the it's beating Hank Aaron's record, now Bond's record in tennis. This is, you know, overtaking Jack Nicklaus or the DiMaggio's hitting streak. This has huge implications. I mean, who knows when we'll see Djokovic again? It does not seem as though he's ready to capitulate or to just say, you know, the heck with it. I don't want to, but I'll take the stupid vaccine because it's going to let me continue playing. It doesn't seem like that's on the table right now. So this has absolutely these historical echoes that, you know, I mean, I think everyone 60 days ago figured he was going to come to Australia, win a 10th title and become the all-time majors winner. And now it's, not only is he not there to defend his title, not only is Nadal in the mix to overtake him, but no one knows when we're going to see this guy again. So I think everybody's happy the story's over. We're back to tennis, but there's still some chapters to play out here.
John, you probably know these players better than we do, certainly on a personal level in some instances. Doesn't it tell you a lot about him as a human being that his calculus was, I'm on the threshold of history, but my choice is still going to be not to get vaccinated, knowing that this could have happened?
I think that's a really good point. And if nothing else, this gave us a real insight into the way an elite athlete thinks. And it is not pragmatically like a lot of us. There is this extreme level of self-belief that most of us, I mean, you know it, but most of us will never know. That's what enables you to beat Roger Federer when you're, you know, down match points to him on center court at Wimbledon and still figure a way to pull it out. I mean, sometimes it serves Djokovic very, very well. Other times you sort of just look at this whole situation from afar, and it's kind of, you know, I mean, to a lot of people's way of thinking, it's just mind-boggling he would put himself in this situation. But I think, yeah, it's a real insight into the way he works and his level of confidence and certitude and self-belief. And again, I mean, as an elite athlete, sometimes this serves him really well. But it's crazy that he's going to let this opportunity in history essentially slip away over not wanting to put something in his body that billions of other people, including, you know, including 98 out of 100 of his colleagues have done. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's kind of fascinating. And again, the fact that so much history is pivoting on this, I think, is something that's been a little bit lost in the hot take.
Absolutely right, because to your point, now what this has done is this has forced sides back into their trenches where they can take shots at one another. But your point about history being altered as a result, and I don't know what Nadal does or doesn't have left in the tank, but should he win this and then he becomes the all-time record holder with the French out there on the horizon, and Djokovic potentially, if this three-year thing is upheld, John, that's missing out on 25% of his opportunities to add to his total. This moment in time quite clearly has changed and impacted the Australian Open of 2022. But the ramifications, I don't know that we've truly appreciated everything that could follow afterwards as a result of this.
And keep in mind, too, I mean, Djokovic, all these guys have obviously won 20 majors. 9 of them for Djokovic have come in Australia. So he might not go back to the country till he's 37. I mean, that also assumes that he isn't so upset with what happened that he'll even want to go back. And not only is he taking himself out of contention for 25% of these, I mean, right now it's unclear if he can get into France. It looks doubtful. Unclear if he can get into Wimbledon. Doubtful. Unclear. You can't get into the U.S. now if you're unvaccinated. But the one he's eliminating him from is the one where he's won 45%. I mean, 9 out of his 20 have come in Australia. So it's just, I mean, it's wild. And there, I don't know. I mean, I think there is a sliver. I mean, I don't think it's some level it's binary, right? Either get vaccinated or don't play. But I do think there's some nuance here. And the fact that he has these convictions that despite this, I mean, he fought this thing to the bitter end in Australia. I mean, it's really like a fascinating personality profile. And I think the other thing is, you know, Landon, I'm sure you know this. People, oh, it's a bad boy of tennis, and it's the new John McEnroe. And you want to say that's not the case at all. This is somebody with a pathological desire to be well liked. So this is not Aaron Rodgers with his Ayn Rand T-shirt slogan. I mean, this is somebody who we've seen this in before. He really wants people's respect and affection, and he wants people to say Novak Djokovic is a great guy, but he has this sort of this pathological need to be liked, and also this sort of pathological ability sometimes to get in his own way. And they really collided very dramatically here.
Yeah. And you know, how does this set up? You know, history will probably not focus on the details of the situation. But in the short term, John, as this tournament plays out here, I would imagine that the champion might be asked about winning this tournament in the absence of Djokovic, something that is completely out of this person's control, right? So I wonder how that might get viewed from whomever it is that's there holding the trophy at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think don't you feel this way about all sports, that we get hung up on this asterisk idea, right? And it's one thing if, you know, Roger Maris doesn't have the same number of games as you know, I mean, I think sometimes it's legitimate, but I think this always happens, right? Tiger's not playing, or there's some controversial call, or, you know, this happens all the time, you know, in tennis, Serena has an injury, does it mean there's an ask? And I feel like, you know, it's a 2-week tournament, and by about day 4, which is what we're on, everyone's kind of locked in. Yeah. And I think, you know, the players have all been asked about Djokovic. Some of them have sort of been more forceful than others. But I don't think people go back and say, aha, but that's the one where, I mean, you know, there was one tournament where Djokovic should have won, and he hit, this is the 2020 U.S. Open, he hit the lineswoman in the mouth, in the throat with the ball. So, you know, I think people are going to remember this for whoever holds up the trophy, and only the hardcore tennis fans will say, you know, aha, this was the one that Djokovic was a 9-time defending champion and didn't play in. I feel like the asterisk in sports is always good,
right?
Good fodder, but it doesn't usually stick.
John, speaking of someone who maybe will have a chance to hold the trophy, although I don't think this is necessarily the case, I was watching the tournament before the Aussie Open. I think it was in Adelaide, maybe, and I turned on Tennis Channel, saw Nadal playing this American, Cressy, who I'd never heard of. And now I've been kind of following him, and he won his first two. He beat Isner in this first match. Who is this kid? And where, you know, or is he a kid, or has he been around? Is he a journeyman? Where's he? What's his deal?
Oh, man. You were kidding, Darren. That's a great question. Max Cressy is a French player, but he spent a lot of time in Chicago and played at UCLA. And his great distinction, he's only 24, so he's a kid at tennis term. His great distinction is that he's a serving volleyer, which is, you know, like a submarine pitcher. It's like a knuckleballer in tennis terms. And we don't see this a lot, but every serve, a big, huge guy, like 6'6", I mean, his serve, you know, 10 aces a set, and he will head to the net after every serve, which sort of gives him automatic affection among tennis fans in a throwback kind of way. But former UCLA Bruin, and I think there's a bright future here. I mean, I think a lot of people are skeptical of that as a tactic, but, you know, he's going to be in the top 50 after this tournament. As you say, he, you know, went to a tournament final, played Nadal, and now he's into the second round, just beat John Isner. So it's a good time.
And then can I follow up with one on the women's side? So two Americans who have had a lot of hype, and unfortunately both went crashing out in the first round, Coco Gauff and Sloane Stephens. What's, you know, I guess inside the tennis world, what's the take on those two? And, you know, Sloane has kind of fallen off a little bit after a rise to prominence, and we'll see how Coco responds. But what's the feeling in the tennis world as to how successful those two can be?
Sloane just got married. She's a member of the soccer community. And she's always been such an up-and-down player. Ironically, she lost to Emma Raducanu, the teenager that won the U.S. Open unexpectedly. And Sloane, you know, Sloane's closer to 30 than she is to 20 and getting on in years a bit. But she's always sort of been very unpredictable. And as far as Coco, disappointing result, lost in the first round. She's also 17 years old, so I think people play the long game on her.
John, we appreciate it. We know you're a busy man. We appreciate the time, as always. A million different things going on in your universe, and all of them A-plus stuff across the board. Thanks for taking the time.
You got it. Thanks. Pleasure talking. Thanks,
you got John. It. John Wertheim, 60 Minutes. Again, I know it's not sports. It was just riveting television to watch this piece. Going to Amsterdam, former FBI agents, trying to figure out who it was that ended up setting up the Frank family. Again, much more about the tennis and everything going on in Australia. You're a big tennis guy. I'm very impressed.
So
if we were doing a show together, this would be your wheelhouse. When we weren't talking soccer, we'd be talking about tennis.
I think our ratings would plummet. when I met my wife Hannah in 2013, she played her whole life. You know, grew up playing tennis every day, basically, and then played at Boston University. And I was like, still a professional athlete, I can beat, you know, no girl, no woman is going to beat me in tennis. And so the first time we played, she absolutely smashed me. I mean, like, just smashed me. And so then I got real, like, committed to trying to get good at it. So I played literally for the first 4 years of retirement. I played, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. I love it. It's fun to watch.
And you still play that
still
much?
I played this morning.
You did?
Yeah.
Who do you play against?
I do like a clinic where you give, you know, 6 or 7 people. It's a workout and compete. And
so like lessons?
Not like a lesson. It's like a clinic.
What's the difference between a clinic and a lesson?
Clinic is like they'll do all these different exercises and drills that are fun with different parts, and you're competing. You know, you're playing to a certain number of points. Sometimes you have a partner. Sometimes you're playing a singles exercise, things like that. So it's fun.
And this is, do you play any other sports these days beyond?
I'm playing basketball tomorrow.
Really?
A bunch of guys, yeah.
Where does that happen?
Rancho Santa Fe Community Center.
Outside, inside?
inside, but we'll have the doors open to be COVID appropriate.
And you can play basketball. I'm not judging books by covers here.
When
I'm
you
just
say
saying,
you can play basketball,
I'm just saying
I mean,
that
anybody can
a footwork.
Play basketball.
You know, it's a footwork.
Yeah,
so
but there's a lot of
crossover.
But I played a lot of basketball growing up.
I did not know that.
Yeah, you should have known with my huge height.
Right. And your broad shoulders.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well,
now, I mean, played a lot of basketball, probably as much
dudes
as soccer.
Are, you know, they're like inverted NBA guys. NBA guys have these huge shoulders and these tiny little feet, you know, these tiny little legs and ankles and stuff. Soccer guys are big and thick around the ankles and then not so much up top.
Right.
You can shoot, handle?
I can't. I can shoot okay if I'm playing a lot.
You ever play with AJ Preller?
No.
You should play with
AJ
Preller. Does AJ Preller play?
Oh, really?
He's got a rep around town.
Really?
Being a bit of a ringer.
Interesting. I mean, I can't play with like real players, but I can like I can defend and run and.
I don't know. Would we call AJ Preller a real player? A
well,
real
you know,
basketball
like,
player?
I haven't seen him play, so I really couldn't tell you.
But he's always like dressed the part. He's always wearing baggy basketball shorts.
No, but there's a tennis. There's a very clear line in tennis. People who can actually play, maybe they're just not great or in great shape, versus people have no idea how to play. And I'm sure in basketball it's the same. Like there's a threshold where it's like, oh, you played in college, you can play, versus like, oh, you have no idea what you're doing.
Right. You're just out there for the exercise.
Yeah. And there's in every sport there's a threshold like that.
That's good exercise.
Great
tennis.
Exercise.
I've been trying to play, but there's no tennis courts where I live.
It's okay. There's tennis courts everywhere.
I know there were where I lived in North Park, but we just never made our way out there. I mean, it's great, like lateral, right?
It's great.
Like
it's
a great way
workout,
to stay in shape.
And it's fun.
And
you
can
play it till you're 80.
So the most important question, though, is can you beat your wife in tennis?
Oh, careful. Yes, I can now.
You can now?
Yeah.
Now that you.
Well,
you know,
I can and I do.
Now that you had three of your kids.
Yeah, she's a little disadvantaged there.
Right. Okay. You make her chase these children all day. And
she's
now you're like, okay,
that.
Now's my opportunity to get revenge on my wife.
Tell you what, she was best when she was pregnant. I can't remember with one of our kids, she was when she was pregnant. And she has like a two-handed backhand. And she just got all her leverage into it. And for a while, she was just smashing the ball pregnant. And that's a very demoralizing thing as a man to have a pregnant woman just destroy you on the tennis court.
I'm very impressed, especially for a professional athlete.
Correct.
I'm very impressed with your tennis knowledge.
Thanks.
Seriously.
All you
have
to
do
is
tennis
turn
players?
On the TV and watch.
Lots of people do.
Actually,
that
one of the highlights, I don't get, as you can imagine, I've met a lot of like pretty relatively famous or good athletes. I went to Indian Wells a few years ago and got to meet both Rafa and Fed. Actually, at the same time, they were both kind of hanging out. And that was really cool because they're both unbelievably kind, humble human beings. Like, really, you know, when you can tell when an athlete's kind of BSing you versus like real, really good human beings. It was really cool.
And that was, see, I've missed out every opportunity to go to Indian Wells.
You should
every
go.
Year. I'm like, I got it. Cause the one person I really want to go see is Serena.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I feel like I've run out of time here.
Yeah. You're getting close.
I know. I really want her to win one more.
I mean, just think about what she's doing at her age. And then now she had a baby. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, pregnant
I have
Serena.
So much
no chance
respect.
Against
so
pregnant
much
Serena.
She's yeah, no.
She, and like the story is one of the great stories in the history of sports in this country. I've said this a million times. The audience is probably tired of hearing me say it. It is their background, their history, growing up where they grew up, in their surroundings that they had, is one of the most underrated sports stories that this country's ever had.
Yep.
And it just to think about who was like guarding these tennis courts. For these two little girls to play in a sport which was only reserved for white people at the time. Like
mostly white men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then to do the things that they had done and to accomplish the things. They've been around for like most of our lives.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, we don't appreciate it because we get used to it.
Yeah.
You know what those two have done.
Except when you don't have it there. All right, Landon Donovan's in studio, hanging around. Salad is almost done. On the text line, you've been referred to, you and Marty, both as psychos. No offense to Landon and Marty, but only sociopaths drink black coffee.
What? Well, I don't get it.
I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yep. 858.
Keep it simple.
I'm a sociopath, but not because of the black coffee.
Yes,
after Landon's tennis questions this afternoon, I'm voting big time for Darren and Donovan radio show.
Darren and Donovan.
Oh, huh? Darren and Donovan. I like that.
That's not bad.
But the down low has a, I like that too, though. The DL.
On the DL. That's
the DL.
On the DL,
I like that.
Okay.
There's a lot of different directions you can go with that.
619 number says you should hire Landon as your producer.
There you go.
Why?
don't know. At least, please. 858, Darren and Landon, weekdays at noon. I wish I could listen, but my break is over. So people are into it.
You didn't read all the bad ones. That's the problem.
Well, there's one here that I have to read during the break because it takes some issue with your logic about vaccines and athletes and all that sort of stuff.
Hey, I welcome those discussions because it's okay to have different opinions.
Right. You have to practice what you preach. You just said it's okay to have differing views.
Let's talk about it. By the way, my mind has changed on all that stuff. You know, like in the beginning, we didn't have as much data, info, whatever. And I was like, okay, I'm not leaving my house. Now I'm like, okay, well, we're seeing how it's okay. Maybe Joko's outside far away from people playing tennis.
Somebody wants to know if you have your sights set on the U.S. men's national team someday, being the head gaffer there. How do we make it happen? Says the 619 number.
I have a long way to go till I'm ready for that, but maybe one day.
Seriously, like maybe someday.
Sure. Well, why would you close that door? But I'm not even close to being ready for that.
Would you consider managing the Mexican team?
No. I don't think that would be a wise
move. Do you ever get tired of those tweets on coming?
I just mute people because it's like, enough.
You're sticking around?
I'll stick around, yeah.
All right, Landon Donovan, sticking around. Marty's NFL Notes segment comes up next.
Okay, it's either that or I go watch three kids all night.
So Landon will be here till 6.
Even this show's off at 3.
He'll be joining John.
Tell my wife. Okay, no one's listening, right? Tell my wife it's off at 6. The show's over at 6.
You watching the NFL playoffs?
Oh, yeah.
Raiders fan.
Yeah, such a bummer.
Did you have expectations? How'd you feel watching
Andrew
Raiders
Vasiliadis and I are both huge Raider fans.
I did not know that.
He is because when the Chargers left, he and his friends decided, like, we need a team to support. We're not supporting the Chargers. Probably like a lot of people in San Diego.
My enemy's enemy is my friend.
There you go.
All right.
And so they decided on that.